Hello, it's Rudy Giuliani, and I'm back with you with Rudy's Common Sense on an extraordinary period of time. This election, of course, has been the most unusual in American history. Now it's going to be the most unusual election count in American history, probably challenging Bush v. Gore. Let me tell you my experience. I've been here in Washington, D.C. for a number of days. To deal first with the aftermath, the last couple of days of the election, and now with the legal matters that hang over. When I went to bed, which was very, very late on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I'd say around 3 or 4 in the morning, I was quite confident that President Trump had won re-election based on every criteria that I knew from prior elections, which go back to really, with any experience, John Kennedy's. And before that, as a child, I remember Eisenhower in 52. So I'm not a baby. And he had won. And I'm going to tell you how he had won and what they hadn't called. They hadn't called Pennsylvania for him as of that time. And it was only about 81 or 82% of the vote was out at that time. I'm sorry, 65% of the vote was out, and he was ahead by 15%. Impossible to win fairly, honestly, that way, when you consider that there were votes out about evenly in Philadelphia and then in the rest of the state or the parts of the state that were pro-Trump. In order to make that up, Biden would have to get about 70% of the vote. The only way he'd get 70% of the vote is if the vote were all from Philadelphia, where he was running about there or better. Other parts of the state, he was running almost the opposite. Trump was running up margins of 65 to 85%. So if this were a fair process, even by Fox, that would have been called for him, particularly since they called Virginia very early on with a very small sample of the vote. With Trump actually ahead in Virginia, they called it for Biden. Only Fox did. CNN still hasn't called Virginia for Biden. Michigan, he was ahead by 8% with 64% of the vote cast. Again, the votes out were in both, let's call them Trump and Biden parts of the state. If you're going to call Virginia as early as they did, and you're going to call Arizona as early as you did, with considerably less of a margin for Trump to make up, to turn those states around, than existed in Michigan for Biden, then you're being unfair. You're not applying the same standard to the same to both candidates. So those are two states that should have been called for him. Georgia and North Carolina certainly should have been called for him. They were down to about 88% of the vote cast, and there was a 3.5%. I'm sorry, Georgia was 78% of the vote cast, 3.5% lead in Georgia, and a 3.5% lead in North Carolina at 80% of the vote. Those would have been just naturals. If you had called all those states that should have been called, he'd have been just a little shy of the 270 needed to win. And then you had him ahead in Wisconsin by 5% with 65% of the vote to go, which looked like it was going to go his way, particularly given the votes that were left. And you might not want to call that unless you're very, very pro-Trump. But you'd go to bed feeling, hey, we got this election won, particularly since Nevada hadn't even really started counting yet. And it, by every token, it looked like he was either going to win Nevada or it was going to be like that. And turns out it is like that. First thing about this election is pollsters should all retire. What's the use of having polls? I mean, this would be like, I mean, I know the weatherman is wrong, but this would like be the weatherman is wrong all the time. Every time he says rain, it's sunny. Every time he says sunny, it rains. This has been true now. I mean, according to the pollsters, Al Gore would be president. John Kerry was ahead on election night. I was there 8 o'clock at night at the Fox studios when the Fox pollster told the executives of Fox that John Kerry was the next president. So John Kerry would have been the president. Hillary Clinton would have been the president. Why do we take them? I mean, they're so far off. This was supposed to be a landslide for Biden. Well, it certainly isn't a landslide, and he's not going to win. They were supposed to take the Senate. They did not take the Senate. They were supposed to make gains in the House. They did not make gains in the House. And why are the mistakes always pro, why are the mistakes always mistakes where they go too pro-Democrat in order to suppress our vote, discourage our vote? And just think of what Fox did to us by calling Virginia early when CNN didn't. How many votes did they suppress in Virginia when people could still vote in other parts of the country? So, I'm sorry, I don't think you can vote anymore in Virginia, but in other parts of the country, there's still a lot of voting left. And both the Virginia call and the Arizona call in particular were very, very damaging because Arizona was made into a big deal. Biden takes Trump state, says Fox. CNN says too close to call. I mean, just think of that, the impact of calling, of Fox calling Arizona for Biden when CNN didn't, and then making a big deal out of it. I think they were playing trumpets. Biden makes first breakthrough a campaign. Biden wins Trump state. Maybe. Maybe not. Nobody else called it. Don't tell me that didn't have an impact on the campaign. Of course it did. It had an impact on the psychology of this, which pushed all the networks then to kind of leave out the calling the Trump states. Let's call Biden. Let's get him to 270. Let's get him to 270. Reality now, the reality of where we stand now is Pennsylvania is Trump's. If and for any reason that vote total changes, it has to be a fraud. Plus, there is so much evidence of fraud already in Pennsylvania. As I sit here right now, there's only about 8% of the vote to be counted. Trump's ahead by a clear 135,000. He may very well get 120,000 votes disqualified because his observers were not allowed for 21 hours to observe the mail ballots. In that case, a district court judge in, a lower court judge in Philadelphia, of course, ruled with the Democrats. She was a Democratic hack. But the appellate court now has reversed it and ruled with the Republicans that, in fact, there was deprival of the right of observation with regard to those 135,000 ballots, which now have to be cast aside and either taken out of the equation or reexamined. So now we have a lead of 135, and we have 135 to 140 ballots that have been taken out of the process. So not that Pennsylvania won't try to continue to cheat. Governor Wolf will cheat. But we're on top of him. We're in state court. We're in federal court. And we'll be in every court possible because we're not going to let the Democrats steal Pennsylvania. Just not going to happen. Now we go to the other states that are still out there. Georgia, he has won. It's just a matter of calling it. Just a matter of calling it. I know it's only 0.4%, but ladies and gentlemen, Milwaukee was only 0.3%. Or Michigan. Excuse me, Wisconsin. If Wisconsin can only be 0.3% and called, why isn't Georgia called at 0.4%? The only difference is Georgia, they figure there's more of a capacity for the Democrats to cheat a little, particularly the machine in Atlanta, which is, not so nice. He's won Georgia, ladies and gentlemen. If they try to fool around with it, we'll get it back legally. Believe me. North Carolina, I have no idea why they don't call North Carolina. He's ahead by 2.3%. There's 5% of the vote cast. I did the arithmetic quickly. There are 250,000 additional votes to count. For Biden to win, he'd have to win 210 of the 250,000. And they're not calling it. Tell me they're not corrupt. Tell me they're not corrupt. We just have a few more points to make. So, this election has been won by Donald Trump. The Democrats are now in the process of completing what they started almost 5 years ago, which is the plan to stop him from being president of the United States by developing false charges of Russian collusion, continuing those as part of their struck insurance policy into a four-year-long, three different investigation, $50 million process that went nowhere, that never had to happen. According to Brennan's letter to Obama, it was Hillary Clinton that developed that as a false charge in order to cover up her crimes with regard to her computer. So they went through all that. They did the whole Ukrainian thing against him, which now turns out when you look at the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden computer, there was plenty of evidence that Joe Biden got a $14 million bribe in the Ukraine from Mykola Zloshevsky. In fact, that something's got to be pursued no matter what, win, lose, or draw. That's a bribery of a vice president of the United States on record, making that whole Ukrainian immigration thing, the whole Ukrainian impeachment thing, a complete farce. And now we're into phase three or four, which is the plan they started developing months ago with this mail-in ballot thing, which is entirely unconstitutional. The mail-in ballots were going to be a way for the Democrats to regularize and make legal what they do illegal in many elections and in places like New York, Boston, Chicago. They hold back the vote, and Florida, they hold back the vote. When we get down to these last 4 or 5%, like you see going on, and then somehow they find new ballots. In fact, in Milwaukee, while we were asleep, they found 138,000 new ballots, all for Biden. All for Biden. You think those were cast by real voters? Or you think they were cast by some Democrat sitting in a back room? This has been their plan all along. It is totally impossible, illogical, irrational, that the same thing would happen in all five or six places where there were close votes. What do I mean by the same thing? I mean the thing that the gentleman in Philadelphia has given us an affidavit on, and we'll get many of them now. The man heading the delegation of Republicans that was supposed to observe the mail-in ballots was kept in a room for 21 hours where he had no ability to see the ballots. Explain that to you. That's been reversed now. We're going to still have to go to the Supreme Court with it because the damage has already been done. But here's the end result of this. The end result of this, we've got similar conduct now, not allowing Republicans to observe the mail-in ballots. We've got it in Philadelphia. We've got it in Milwaukee. We've got it in Detroit. We've got it in Phoenix, Arizona, and we have it in both Las Vegas and Reno, as I told you. And those are all going to be pursued as part of separate and then long-term federal suits. Donald Trump won this election. The Democrats tried everything they could beforehand to stop him, including censorship. They couldn't. Now they've got one last chance, and that is what they're very good at, which is cheating on the vote count. But this time, this is a Republican Party and a president who fights for you because they want to take your vote away. They want the elites to determine our president. And we want the people of the United States to determine our president. And we will fight to make sure that your vote is counted and that your vote is not canceled out by an illegal vote. And we'll do whatever we have to do within the law to do that. That's because we have a president who cares about you. And they have a candidate who says, you don't deserve the right to know. And who announced, probably in a Freudian slip, 2 days before, looking at the people, I'm going to win it without you. Yep, he's going to win it with the network heads, the big tech heads, and the money that he's gotten from all kinds of places, including communist China. We're not going to let that happen. Thank you, and we'll be back in a few days with another Rudy's Common Sense.
Welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. At some point soon, we're told, maybe tonight, possibly, Joe Biden may take the stage to declare himself effectively the president-elect of the United States. That is a highly aggressive and very unusual move. Keep in mind there is vote counting still underway in a number of states. But then the Biden campaign's behavior in the last 48 hours, like so much we've seen recently, raises profound questions about our electoral system and whether it's really what we've assumed it was. We'll address all of that in a moment. But the first question tonight is far more basic than that. Who exactly is Joe Biden, this man who claims to be our president? We probably ought to find out. Put that on the to-do list. The truth is, as of tonight, we don't really know. We have no clue what Joe Biden actually thinks or even if he's capable of thinking. He hasn't told us. No one's made him tell us for a full year now. That's by design. In fact, it's becoming clear there is no Joe Biden. The man you may remember from the 1980s is gone. He no longer exists. What remains is a projection of sorts, a hologram designed to mimic the behavior of a non-threatening political candidate. Relax, Joe Biden's here. He smiles a lot. Everything's fine. That's the message from the vapor candidate. Don't think too much. So who's running the projector here? Well, the first thing you should know is the people behind Joe Biden aren't liberals, though we've often called them that incorrectly on this show. A liberal believes in the right of all Americans to speak freely, to make a living, to worship their God, to defend their own families, and to do all of that regardless of what political party they belong to, or what race they happen to be born into, or how far from Midtown Manhattan they currently live. A liberal believes in universal principles fairly applied. And the funny thing is, all of that describes most of the 70 million people who just voted for Donald Trump this week. Most of them don't want to hurt or control anyone. They have no interest in silencing the opposition on Facebook or anywhere else. They just want to live their lives in the country they were born in. And it doesn't seem like a lot to ask. So by any traditional definition, they are liberal that way, though our language has become so politicized and so distorted that you would never know it. What you do know for certain is that the people behind Joe Biden are not like that at all. They don't believe in dissent. You think one thing, I think another, that's okay. No, that's not them at all. They demand obedience. Diversity, which is to say legitimate differences between people, is the last thing they want. Diversity? It's a cruel joke. They must mean it ironically. These people seek absolute sameness, total uniformity. You're happy with your corner coffee shop. They want to make you drink Starbucks every day from now until forever, no matter how it tastes. That's the future they promise. Everyone doing the same thing. Now, if these seem like corporate values to you, uniformity is the most basic corporate value, then you're catching on to what's happening. The Joe Biden for President campaign is a purely corporate enterprise. It's the first one in American history to come this close to the presidency. Its values, its slogans, its goals come straight from the HR department. If a multinational corporation decided to create a presidential candidate, he would be a former credit card shill from Wilmington, Delaware. And that's exactly what they got. What's good for Google is good for the Biden campaign and vice versa. We have never seen a more soulless project. They literally picked Kamala Harris as the vice president, someone who can't even pronounce her own name, not that it matters, because it's purely an advertising gimmick. We watched all of this come together in real time. We stood slack-jawed in total disbelief as a man with no discernible constituency of any kind rose to the very top of our political system as if by magic. We look for wires. How did he do that? He keeps rising. It's possible in the end that Joe Biden himself never convinced a single voter of anything over the entire duration of the presidential campaign. Not one. But he didn't have to. Joe Biden won the Democratic nomination because he wasn't Bernie Sanders. He came to where he is today because he isn't Donald Trump. That is the entire story. It's the shortest political book ever written. Now, whatever you may think of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, they did it the traditional way. Each one of them had the support of actual voters. Living, breathing people loved them, believed in them, vested their hope in them, and by the way, agreed with their ideas, which they articulated clearly. But corporate America hated them both. They couldn't be controlled, particularly Donald Trump, whose complete unwillingness to submit made him the greatest possible threat. And that's why they hate Donald Trump. That's the reason, because he won't obey. Tonight it's possible that these forces may be winning. We can't say that now. Of course, we would never say that until it is absolutely certain. But it could happen. What then? Who will we say really won the election? Joseph R. Biden? Please. That's insulting. The tech companies will have won. The big banks will have won. The government of China, the media establishment, the permanent bureaucracy, the billionaire class. They will have won. And not in a way that democracy promises. With numbers alone, if a single person equaled a single vote, a coalition like that could never win anything. There aren't enough of them. But as a group, they have something that Donald Trump's voters sadly do not have, and that is power. They have lots of power, and they plan to wield that power whether you like it or not. It's all starting to look a lot like oligarchy at this point. The people who believe they should have been in charge all along now actually may be in charge. So what does that mean for the rest of us? Now that corporate America controls everything, which is what they wanted, will they declare victory and back off, finally? Can we speak freely again? Will they take the boot from our necks? Can we have America back? Now that the great orange emergency has passed, will the mandatory lying orders finally be lifted? Those are the questions we'll be paying attention to since we plan to stay in this country. And one other thing, by the way, while we're at it, who's excited to greet our new corporate overlords? Who plans to collaborate, particularly who on the right side, the Republican side, the side that said it was defending you? Who's happy about all of this? That seems worth keeping track of just so we know who we're dealing with here. Ned Ryan is the CEO of American Majority. He does keep track, and he joins us tonight. Ned, it's great to see you.
Good to be with you, Tucker.
This is, it goes without saying, not any kind of call. We don't know where this is going. Votes are being counted. There are apparent irregularities. Those will be examined, we pray. In some cases, they'll be litigated. But a lot of people in Washington feel that this is over. And some of them seem pretty happy about it. Who are they?
Well, first of all, I want to highlight you're right. And I think your opening monologue was it's incumbent upon Trump to not stop, to use every option at his disposal.
Right.
If nothing else, for the implications of it. And the American people deserve a free and fair election that they can trust and trust an institution instead of half the people thinking it's been stolen. But think about it. You're right. This ruling class of administrative state, big tech, corporations, all of these people think that they can get rid of Trump. And we'll go back to normal. We'll create a normal. We'll go back to it. They're delusional. I mean, the point I want to make here tonight is that Trump has red-pilled literally 70 million American people. He's illuminated everything, whether it's the danger of China, whether it's the danger of big tech, the administrative state, fake news, a whole litany of issues. They're delusional if they think that these people, myself included, are somehow just going to disappear if they can somehow take out Trump. And they're wedded to a broken system. That's the other thing. Tucker, they're wedded to a broken system that has sold out the American people, and now they want to go, and you know they're going to try and snap back to advancing policies that are actually going to sell out the American people and the middle class especially. They're not going to fix immigration. They're not going to fix trade deals. They're not going to break up big tech. They're not going to do any of these things, and yet this is only going to accelerate whatever comes next. Again, America First is not going away.
So I was particularly interested. And there's a lot of this, but I just want to highlight one to begin. In the comments of Lindsey Graham, who just won re-election in the state of South Carolina because conservatives voted for him, the Trump people around Trump put a great deal of pressure on Lindsey Graham to send them money. So after a day or two, That's he right. made a great show of sending him $500,000. But then on the issues that matter, Lindsey Graham immediately ran away from the ideas he claimed to support and said he will be happy to sell out his voters with an amnesty deal, like within hours of the election.
But this is the surrender caucus. It feels like they've been waiting in the wings. They can't wait to get back into where they actually control the Republican Party. And I'm talking not only about Lindsey Graham, Ben Sasse, Mitt Romney, heck, even Liz Cheney, these neocon globalists who can't get enough of the vulture capitalism and the selling out of the American middle class. They can't wait to get back into power. And the shameful part of it is, you know that they have not embraced Trump for a variety of reasons, because he's a repudiation of everything that they have stood for. And he has been in control of the party. And now they're waiting for in hopes that he somehow will be removed from it. And these are the kind of people, Tucker, who, quite frankly, have been surrendering, have been going along to getting along, don't know how to win. And quite frankly, a lot of their policies, as we have seen, they've been more concerned about rebuilding the Middle East than the Midwest. That is a shameful part of the Republican Party. And they are doing nothing, for the most part right now, to stand up and say, we're not going to let this happen, what is taking place with this election, because they fail to understand. If we don't fix what has taken place, and I am convinced that major fraud has taken place, it is the end of free and fair elections. Republicans won't win again. They will be in a permanent minority if we are not careful, especially if we are not careful about these Georgia Senate races, and we have no backstop if we lose the majority in the Senate.
Well, that is exactly right. And of course, that's the tragedy. You have a deeply flawed party that refuses to protect its own voters and represent their legitimate interests. But they are the only hope that this country doesn't descend into something totally unrecognizable.
Kind of scary.
So it puts 70 million decent people in a tough spot. Ed Ryan, we'll talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tucker.
So there is a political realignment coming. The distance between what people will want and what they're getting from their leaders is just too vast. Some Democrats understand this, and they're very nervous about it. We've got the tape next. Expert analysis this year. It's been a bad year for the experts between COVID and the election results. But one of the things the moron class predicted, of course, was a disaster for the GOP in the House of Representatives. Republicans were going to get absolutely crushed. So let's examine very quickly the gap between their projections, the experts' projections, and what actually happened. It looks like Republicans will gain between 5 and 10 seats in the House. Some are predicting more. They also flipped control of two state legislatures. Now, if you're a Democrat, that's got to lead to some tough questions. Maybe identity politics and corporate economics isn't a great combination because most people hate that. They hate that. They want the opposite. They want stability, moderate social conservatism. They believe in families because they have them. And they don't actually think that the corporate bottom line is the most important thing in their family. Maybe a little bit of economic populism is okay with them. So possibly the Democratic Party needs to stop catering to the women's studies majors at Wesleyan and start thinking about everyone else. Andrew Yang, who's been kind of a party man recently, but at his core is a smart guy, raised that possibility last night. And here's part of what he said.
I had that experience countless times on the trail, Don, where I would say, hey, I'm running for president, to a truck driver, retail worker, a waitress in a diner. And they would say, what party? And I say Democrat, and they would flinch. Like I'd said something really negative, or I just like had like turned another color or something like that. And there's something deeply wrong when working class Americans have that response to a major party that theoretically is supposed to be fighting for them. So you have to ask yourself, what has the Democratic Party been standing for in their minds? And in their minds, the Democratic Party, unfortunately, has taken on this role of the coastal, urban elites who are more concerned about policing various cultural issues than improving their way of life that has been declining for years.
Exactly. And you'd think they would know that because they probably take Uber like everybody else. And how many immigrant Uber cab drivers at the very bottom of the gig economy the Democrats created are listening to Fox News on the radio? You ever notice that? If you haven't, then you're not an Uber, because they are. And those are exactly the kind of people the Democrats claim they represent, but instead they've ignored for the past 4 years and yelled about Russia, Russia, Russia. Now, privately, some Democrats know they need to figure this out right away. On a call with other Democrats yesterday, Abigail Spanberger, she's an elected member of Congress from Virginia, made that clear.
I think that we need to be pretty clear about the fact that Tuesday, from a congressional standpoint, it was a failure. It was not a success. We lost members who shouldn't have lost. We need to not ever use the word socialist or socialism ever again. Because while people think it doesn't matter, it does matter. And we lost good members because of that. And if we are classifying Tuesday as a success from a congressional standpoint, we need to look at torn apart in 2022.
Ooh, Abigail Spanberger points out the truth. Of course, most of the Democrats who lost were more moderate Democrats, meaning that Sandy Cortez, who's not only stupid but radical, will have more control of the party. And that's a huge problem for Democrats. Spanberger went on to point out that most voters, meaning people who don't live in gated communities or have security guards like Nancy Pelosi, don't want to, quote, defund the police. Another Democrat on the call agreed with Spanberger. Will the party acknowledge this? Brian Dean Wright is a former CIA officer. We're happy to have him on tonight, longtime Democrat. Brian, thanks so much for coming on. So why did it take totally unexpected losses in the House, pretty significant losses, for the Democratic Party to realize that defund the police, put your life in peril, is not a winning campaign message?
Well, the party's unfortunately full of a lot of dumb people. And amazingly, Donald Trump figured that out, because if you look at the coalition of people who voted for him this past election, he's got the working class coalition. People who earn less than $100,000 pulled the lever for him. He got more black and brown and gay people voting for him than any other GOP candidate since 1960. So the question is that Andrew Yang is thoughtfully asking is, can the Democratic Party actually build back that coalition that actually brought it into existence? The answer isn't just no, but hell no, Tucker. And there are four reasons why. Let's talk about the first. In 2016, when Trump won, Democrats had this soul-searching conversation for why they lost. And they came up with a number of reports, and one of them read, and I love this, I'll read this sentence, the lack
good
of
grammar
diversity
and spelling.
And consultants that we hire contributed to our loss. That's right. Identity politics was the solution, right? So it's the consultants. How swampy of an answer, right? But look, they took that answer and they actually adopted it as their belief system, as a rhetoric. We got white man bad stuff, racial divisions and rhetoric. And then they sprinkled in some Marxism and a little bit of America's terrible and bad and awful, right? That's what we got for 4 years, which is then the second issue. What is the leadership of the Democratic Party believe? Right? We know that Tom Perez, the chair of the DNC, said that Ocasio-Cortez and her socialism, true story here, said that she is the future of the party. Show me one damn Democrat over the past 4 years who said that's wrong. Pelosi didn't. She was on Rolling Stone magazine, you know, buddied up next to her with Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, rabidly anti-Jewish. Right. So then we get to the third issue, which is, what do these people actually believe? How are the things that they were going to adopt as law, how would that actually impact the working class? You and I have talked a lot about on this program immigration. When you have immigrants come across the border who can't speak English and have poor education, they take jobs from those who don't have high school educations in this country. That depresses wages, that hurts the working class. The Green New Deal, they want to phase out the cattle industry. How does that affect ranchers and farmers? What about the timber industry they want to get rid of? How does that affect folks who are working in our forests tonight? The point is that what they believe also hurts the middle class and the working class. And my God, let's look at the trade agreements. Why is it over the 50 years that Joe Biden's been in Washington, every one of these trade agreements have somehow benefited countries like China and the folks on Wall Street? But the towns where you are and folks watching this program tonight come from originally, they're dying. Right? I mean, we have pride, but we get cheap crap at Walmart, and then we get injected with booze and opiates. Exactly. Right? And then that's the final piece. So where's the money that feeds the Democratic Party? Where's that coming from? We talked about the Wall Street folks, the people from China, the folks that, bottom line is, they're getting money from the big tech people, and that ain't going to change. Democrats aren't going to change the hand that feeds them. That's why, four reasons, Democrats are not going to change who they are.
I think that's a really smart analysis from the inside, someone who knows the party well. Brian Dean Wright, great to see you. Thank you. Well, if the corporate hologram known as Joe Biden wins, big tech will have more than an ally in the White House. It will have a lackey in the White House. What does that mean for freedom of speech, your ability to say what you think is true? We'll tell you next. Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. At some point soon, we're told, maybe tonight possibly, Joe Biden may take the stage to declare himself effectively the president-elect of the United States. That is a highly aggressive and very unusual move. Keep in mind there is vote counting still underway in a number of states. But then the Biden campaign's behavior in the last 48 hours, like so much we've seen recently, raises profound questions about our electoral system and whether it's really what we've assumed it was. We'll address all of that in a moment. But the first question tonight is far more basic than that. Who exactly is Joe Biden, this man who claims to be our president? We probably ought to find out. Put that on the to-do list. The truth is, as of tonight, we don't really know. We have no clue what Joe Biden actually thinks or even if he's capable of thinking. He hasn't told us. No one's made him tell us. For a full year now. That's by design. In fact, it's becoming clear there is no Joe Biden. The man you may remember from the 1980s is gone. He no longer exists. What remains is a projection of sorts, a hologram designed to mimic the behavior of a non-threatening political candidate. Relax, Joe Biden's here. He smiles a lot. Everything's fine. That's the message from the vapor candidate. Don't think too much. So who's running the projector here? Well, the first thing you should know is the people behind Joe Biden aren't liberals, though we've often called them that incorrectly on this show. A liberal believes in the right of all Americans to speak freely, to make a living, to worship their God, to defend their own families, and to do all of that regardless of what political party they belong to, or what race they happen to be born into, or how far from Midtown Manhattan they currently live. A liberal believes in universal principles fairly applied. And the funny thing is, all of that describes most of the 70 million people who just voted for Donald Trump this week. Most of them don't want to hurt or control anyone. They have no interest in silencing the opposition on Facebook or anywhere else. They just want to live their lives in the country they were born in. And it doesn't seem like a lot to ask. So by any traditional definition, they are liberal that way, though our language has become so politicized and so distorted that you would never know it. What you do know for certain is that the people behind Joe Biden are not like that at all. They don't believe in dissent. You think one thing, I think another, that's okay. No, that's not them at all. They demand obedience. Diversity, which is to say legitimate differences between people, is the last thing they want. Diversity? It's a cruel joke. They must mean it ironically. These people seek absolute sameness, total uniformity. You're happy with your corner coffee shop. They want to make you drink Starbucks every day from now until forever, no matter how it tastes. That's the future they promise. Everyone doing the same thing. Now, if these seem like corporate values to you, uniformity is the most basic corporate value, then you're catching on to what's happening. The Joe Biden for President campaign is a purely corporate enterprise. It's the first one in American history to come this close to the presidency. Its values, its slogans, its goals come straight from the HR department. If a multinational corporation decided to create a presidential candidate, he would be a former credit card shill from Wilmington, Delaware. And that's exactly what they got. What's good for Google is good for the Biden campaign and vice versa. We have never seen a more soulless project. They literally picked Kamala Harris as the vice president, someone who can't even pronounce her own name, not that it matters, because it's purely an advertising gimmick. We watched all of this come together in real time. We stood slack-jawed in total disbelief as a man with no discernible constituency of any kind rose to the very top of our political system as if by magic. We looked for wires. How did he do that? He keeps rising. It's possible in the end that Joe Biden himself never convinced a single voter of anything over the entire duration of the presidential campaign. Not one. But he didn't have to. Joe Biden won the Democratic nomination because he wasn't Bernie Sanders. He came to where he is today because he isn't Donald Trump. That is the entire story. It's the shortest political book ever written. Now, whatever you may think of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, they did it the traditional way. Each one of them had the support of actual voters. Living, breathing people loved them, believed in them, vested their hope in them, and by the way, agreed with their ideas, which they articulated clearly. But corporate America hated them both. They couldn't be controlled, particularly Donald Trump, whose complete unwillingness to submit made him the greatest possible threat. And that's why they hate Donald Trump. That's the reason, because he won't obey. Tonight is possible that these forces may be winning. We can't say that now. Of course, we would never say that until it is absolutely certain. But it could happen. What then? Who will we say really won the election? Joseph R. Biden? Please. That's insulting. The tech companies will have won. The big banks will have won. The government of China, the media establishment, the permanent bureaucracy, the billionaire class. They will have won. And not in a way that democracy promises. With numbers alone, if a single person equaled a single vote, a coalition like that could never win anything. There aren't enough of them. But as a group, they have something that Donald Trump's voters sadly do not have, and that is power. They have lots of power, and they plan to wield that power whether you like it or not. It's all starting to look a lot like oligarchy at this point. The people who believe they should have been in charge all along now actually may be in charge. So what does that mean for the rest of us? Now that corporate America controls everything, which is what they wanted, will they declare victory and back off, finally? Can we speak freely again? Will they take the boot from our necks? Can we have America back? Now that the great orange emergency has passed, will the mandatory lying orders finally be lifted? Those are the questions we'll be paying attention to since we plan to stay in this country. And one other thing, by the way, while we're at it, who's excited to greet our new corporate overlords? Who plans to collaborate, particularly who on the right side, the Republican side, the side that said it was defending you? Who's happy about all of this? That seems worth keeping track of just so we know who we're dealing with here. Ned Ryan is the CEO of American Majority,